Broadcasting from USA Swimming's headquarters at the Carolyn Dirks Building in Colorado Springs, Colorado, it's time for Kick Set. Join three-time Olympian Elizabeth Beisel and U.S. National Team Director of Performance Matt Barbini as they host members from the USA swimming community, ranging from age group to Olympic levels of the sport.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Kick Set podcast. My name is Matt Barbini. I'm the Director of Performance with the USA Swimming National Team, and joining me as always, fresh off one NCAA pool deck and headed to another, three-time Olympian Elizabeth Beisel. Beisel, tell us about women's NCAAs.
Hopefully everybody watched and tuned in or just followed results because it was absolutely unreal. And we were talking earlier before we started recording, but sometimes I feel like the energy at women's NCs, even when I was an athlete and now doing post-race interviews, is a little bit flatter compared to the men's. And this was the first year where I'm walking away thinking that meet was unbelievable. It was electric. It was so energizing. And the most fun women's NCs that I have ever been a part of. So I think that bodes well for the men's, and I leave literally first thing tomorrow. So I'm very excited for that. But Barbini, since it's NCAA season, I know that you have a ton of national team athletes at the training center. So I want to know, like, how is that? How many are there? Yep. What's it like right now?
Yeah. So we, I don't know when this will air, but today is towards the end of March. So we have a 4-week camp that we offer to everybody on the national team. And the majority of people that come are athletes that train in a collegiate environment where their coaches are not available or not as focused as they normally would be. So we'll get pros and then some high school athletes as well. We'll come to get long course training up here. So right now we have about 20, and then we have some other groups that are also have national team athletes on them that are training separately. So our total, we have about 35 national team athletes on campus right now. We're in the third week of our training camp, and that is the hardest one. So it is midday Tuesday, and they just got their butts kicked in today's morning workout. This is definitely the hardest week, and then it doesn't really get that much easier next week, but this is the peak of the intensity, and then it kind of starts to come down before we head to San Antonio. But this is the first time we've really been able to do a full national team camp in a while. Last year we still had some health issues on campus, so we did it, but it wasn't quite this. This has been now three consecutive weeks of some of our best athletes training. It's been awesome. It's great. And now we've got a couple groups coming in from women's NCAAs and some athletes that just came in. So it does start to get a little feisty or a little stale after 3 weeks in the dorms. So having some energy change is good. We got one more week and then we'll see how we did in San Antonio and hope they're not too tired.
I know. I remember going to those camps and just feeling like superwoman afterwards, but also dead tired and never knowing how that would translate into going to a meet straight from altitude in the camp. It's a lot. It's a roll of the dice, but speaking about coaches and college programs and how we are in the height of NCAA season, our guest today is awesome. And I'm so excited. And Barbini, I'm going to let you do your thing because you always embarrass them and talk about their athletes. We're stoked.
So much. Normally I would just do a resume read and try to embarrass them and make it so they stumble over their words for the first 5 minutes. But we're going to talk a lot about this guy's resume, so I'm just going to get straight into it. Our guest is Nick Askew. He is the Howard University Director of Swimming and Diving and Tennis, which we're going to get to in a minute. That's not usually the last word of that sentence. He was a dual sport athlete in both swimming and tennis at Howard. He's currently the coach. He's currently been the coach for about a decade, and has orchestrated, with the help of his athletes and his staff, a pretty remarkable turnaround in the production and the performance of that program. And Howard is the only HBCU with a swim team. And they have had several viral moments. And if you're not familiar, it's a very easy Google to go. Just Google Howard Swim Meet, and you will see some stuff that is not a level of energy that is not common in a college dual meet. So Nick, thank you for being here. Appreciate you joining us.
No, Matt, Elizabeth, I'm so, so excited to be here, man. This is something I've been looking forward to since I got the email and everything. And You know, happy all as always to talk about swimming, but of course, swimming and diving and tennis when that comes up, you know, within the conversation. But thanks so much for having me.
Yeah.
So I want to start here. You accepted the job in 2014, but prior to that, you had actually been vocal that Howard should cut the program. And you turned the job down once before you actually accepted it. So can you just tell us a little bit about, one, why you felt the program should be ended, and then, you know, what happened to change your mind from saying no thanks to yeah, I'll take it a year later?
Yeah, it's kind of a funny flow of events, to be perfectly honest with you. You know, as a competitor in undergrad and even before and even after that, I was always vocal. That's one thing at Howard University, you know, that I learned to find my voice. And even when I'm wrong, you know, I just needed to be able to support my argument and then have an opportunity to discuss the conversation. But the reason I was really, really talking to pretty much anyone who would listen about cutting the program, as bad as that may sound, is because I felt like the university and the department was not doing a service to the young men and women who came to Howard University to be a part of a Division I swimming and diving program, and then get here and didn't have the support, did not have the resources, didn't have the things that really are the fundamentals of helping them develop to be able to chase whatever dreams they have, whether it's completing 4 years, that's a goal within itself in college swimming, or setting records or going to the next level of, you know, pro events or even having, you know, Olympic ambitions. And so I was telling everyone, I would much rather see the program end than to continue to destroy the dreams and the goals that some, you know, of the individuals in our program had as they came in. And then, you know, one day, bringing up tennis, I was out on the tennis court and we were, I connected with the athletic director here at Howard. His name was Lewis Skip Perkins. He's now the athletic director of North Carolina Central University. And I'm really pushing him to restart their program there. But he said, hey, you know, I'd walk by the swimming natatorium today and I saw your name on the wall. And, you know, without hesitation, I was like, it's actually up there twice. He was like, oh, okay. You know, you were quite the swimmer. You know, our swimming coach is not returning next year. You know, would you be interested in having a conversation about, you know, coming and taking over the program? And I was like, yeah, absolutely. Cause, you know, I feel like, you know, if you're willing to have a conversation, I'll, you know, you should be able to sit down and see how the discussion could advance. And, we sat down, had a great conversation about where he thought the program could be, should be. I was able to articulate all of my, you know, feelings towards where the program had been and why, you know, I thought the administration and department had left it falling short. And he got me an interview with the university president, and you know, they had actually made me an offer in that very first year. But unfortunately, Washington, D.C. is super expensive. And the offer that they made was just not enough compared to what I was doing in the private sector, both in tennis and swimming as a coach. And I was like, yeah, I can't do that. I was looking to start a family with my wife and looking, you know, to be able to make sure that we could take care of that family in the D.C. area. And then 1 year later, they came back to the table. We had a new university president. And that university president was very adamant about making sure that athletics at Howard University was no longer seen as a hobby, and that they were going to do some of the things, you know, and roll out things that would actually make it make sense for our programs to develop. And so they came back with a better offer. And for the first time in Howard University swimming and diving history, I was hired as a full-time coach. Every coach prior to me was a part-time coach. They had a full-time job doing something else or several other jobs doing other things to make ends meet. So I knew that that was a step in the right direction. And the conversations that we had about how we needed to develop from the ground up the program, you know, went really, really, really well. I knew that I couldn't get everything I wanted for the program in the first year and the first ask. But they have been phenomenal year after year of raising the level and saying, okay, here, what do you need in this moment? What can help you you know, in this next 6 months or this next year. And that's how we got to where we are.
I absolutely love that story because, like Barbini mentioned earlier, so many of our listeners are coaches or aspiring coaches. And for you to take over a program that hadn't won a dual meet in over 15 years, you have the opportunity, like, which is a dual meet, like not like a conference meet, a dual meet.
Dual meet.
That
yeah.
is, yeah.
Oh, I mean, 300.
Yeah. And it's a beautiful thing because you have a blank slate, but then that also comes with pressure, which is also a privilege. So I would love to know, when you're asking the university president for things, what are those little things that you did to change the trajectory completely of this program? And I know what they are because I've read up on them, but like the paint, like the vibe, all of that stuff. Can you talk about that and how you just changed the culture of the swim team?
Yeah, 100%. You know, the first things first is we have to understand that, you know, swimming is not something that within the Black culture, you know, that is prominent, right? We within the culture, the most prominent sports are obviously going to be football and basketball. So being at an HBCU, we knew there were several things we needed to do and that they had to be very distinct and different for this particular, you know, university. Unfortunately, as well, when I inherited the program, I inherited a program that was in NCAA violations for APR. So our men's team only had 16 hours of practice that they were allowed comparative to the normal 20 hours per week that you can make mandatory. In addition, we were not allowed to have any post-conference or post-season competition. So being able to advance forward when I inherited the program, you know, was not going to be something that our men's program could do. So first things first, we had to take care of the academics. So we started instituting a lot of different things that helped in more than just the immediate way. So the immediate thing we needed was we needed to do better academically. There's no swimming and diving program at the collegiate level that needs to be failing in the classroom. Like, we just can't do that. Right. We need to be at the very highest level of the academic side, you know, within our sports program. So we started instituting mandatory team study hall twice a week. It didn't matter how many, you know, credits you had. It didn't matter how many TikTok followers you got. Didn't matter your GPA or anything else, because what we found is the more we brought the team together, the better they started to bond. And we were absolutely able to start to institute more of the direction that the program was going to be going in those moments. And they get a chance to talk within each other, because what we found is the team was pretty separated. They were cool and they were connected, but there were like pockets of people who, you know, were you know, what we say, they were kicking it together. And we wanted to bring more cohesion. So we instituted mandatory team study hall. Every freshman had to meet with myself during that time at least once a week. And we would ask three questions: how are classes? How is swim? How is everything else? That meeting could last 3 minutes or 3 hours. And it was beautiful to see how the relationship started to evolve within the team, as well as how it started to evolve within myself as the coach and the rest of the team. Then we needed to start taking care of the environment. We have a really nice facility. It's a great facility for a mid-major. It's a 6-lane, 25-yard pool with a 1-meter springboard. But we have this amazing seating balcony that has 422 seats. And all of the aesthetics were off. So all of the walls were this dreary gray. We get decent amount of sunlight, but even within those gray walls, it just, you know, it wasn't appealing. It was like going into a dungeon. And then the seats were a kind of a powder blue. Wasn't even the school color. You know, our school colors are blue and white with a hint of red, and it was just off. So we started hitting up our donors and our sponsors, and we got paint. We had the entire area painted. We're very fortunate too. We had a rebrand of our logo. So we were able to capitalize on that opportunity of getting the new logo put into our natatorium. And we just kept continuing to polish it up, make it a space where our swimmers, our coaches, and everyone who came to be in the environment were going to feel like, okay, this is kind of a chill place. This is cool, right? And that started to evolve where our student athletes, our swimmers, they started to spend more time there. Because what's worse, right? In swimming, you know, you have to get up early. The pool's usually going to be cold. You're going to have a really tough set. you know, and you, and then you start to think about it, you know, oh, am I really going to get the gains from all this work that I'm doing? And I got to be in an environment that I'm not really feeling it in. So we paid a lot of attention to the environment, changing it around. And we started seeing our swimmers and our divers hanging out at the pool more. Like they would sit there and they would do studying. They would eat lunch there or dinner. They would just meet there. And that was something that just happened organically. That was really, really amazing. So paying attention to the environment and the spaces and making sure that everybody involved were going to be, you know, enjoy that space. Then we wanted to pay attention to the competitive space. As you brought up, we had not won a dual meet in almost 15 years. We were like 0-300. We were like, okay, how can we get our team who is now training harder, doing a little bit better, you know, to be able to capture some supporters, some fans. So the first thing we did is we hired an on-deck DJ for every single home meet. And that's different because before we had like somebody with their playlist, which is really cool, but the DJ can read the environment, no different than how a DJ at a club reads the environment in the room. Is like, okay, it's getting a little low in here. Let me turn on this banger. Right. This song, I know this is the one everybody wants to hear, and it's going to really raise the intensity and level. And that was able to help us capture more fans. And again, in the Black culture, you know, 64% of African Americans have limited or no swimming ability. So the people coming to our swim meets, they didn't know the difference between butterfly and the doggy paddle. They don't know the difference between the mile, right, and in the 400 IM. So it was cool to be able to keep them in the stands versus, oh, I'll come see it for 15 minutes. I don't know what's going on. Let me get out of here. They were like, no. The DJ is really on it. Let me see what the next set, you know, the song is going to be and how is this going to keep going. And then number two, we started having food at the swim meets. So we have a vendor that comes and they have, just like if you were going to a basketball game or a football game or a baseball game, popcorn and chips and things like that, all the things that swimmers aren't supposed to eat, right? The vendor was not for our team. It was for the spectators. So now you're not going to leave the meet, which is usually pretty long, right? It's usually hot in there. They're not going to leave the meet because, oh, I'm hungry. Let me go here and not come back. So we were able to keep them there. And then the third thing, as I told the team, is we need to give them a product that they, you know, would appreciate. And for us, that's better swims, better dives. We need to put ourselves in a space where we can be competitive. And what we love is when we saw the energy rise in the stands, it made our swimmers swim faster and our divers dive better. And then our supporters started to understand swimming is very simple. Who touched the wall first, right? So they started seeing our swimmers touching the wall first and they would go crazy. So that energy was just became so organic and amazing within the spaces. And it's something that we've continued to do year in and year out to the point now where we have teams who only want to compete at our pool. You know, that's how the impetus of Battle at the Berg came about. We swam against Georgetown. Coach Jack Levitt over there is an amazing program. He's doing big things there. They just won Big East Conference. They came over to us one year and coach was like, man, we love this environment. We only want to swim here. Let's do it again next year. And I was like, cool. And then, you know, started thinking, how can we make this even bigger? And that's how Battle at the Berg came up. But I always tease because it makes our swimmers and divers do better, but it also makes the other team do better. So I got to figure that out. Like, I don't want to give, you know, the other teams the mojo to swim so fast and dive so well against us. Like, I just need it just to be for us, but it's great for the sport. It's great for the environment. And I'm loving seeing, you know, other teams, other programs, other events kind of taking elements that fit for them. And in those instances, because it's making our sport even more relevant outside of the Olympic years, you know, and, you know, something people are talking about, you know, and we're happy to be at the lead for that.
So you talked about, or Basil talked about the long losing streak. What was the first win and what was the first win like? Like, what was that experience?
It was, to be perfectly honest, I wasn't even expecting it. We had just become so accustomed to losing. And in my mind, where we were as a program, we weren't quite there yet to win a dual meet, even with, you know, the competition we had and the talent that we had on our team. I wasn't sure. I wasn't convinced that, okay, we have the capacity to win the meet. And I remember you know, kind of the flow for our meets for our team is we compete at the meet, high energy. We do our best we can. We have a team meeting right afterwards, right up in the balcony. We talk about the meets, good swims, bad swims, how we can get better. And then we discuss what's next. All right, practice is going to look like this for the next week, blah, blah, blah. And I remember Dr. Farian Cooper. He's in his last year of medical school. Great individual, great young man. He was like, Coach, who won the meet? And I'm thinking, man, what kind of question is that? Why would you? That's not even important right now. You know, blah, blah, blah. That's not where we are. But I flipped over, you know, the results, and I saw it was against Marymount University that we had won the meet, and everybody, I was like, we won. And everyone just went nuts. It was just in a crazy, crazy moment. Because again, that wasn't even on my radar. I wasn't even thinking about it. You know, obviously they had gotten a sense of it. They felt like they did really well. But it was just one of those moments where I'll never forget how crazy that was, because I wasn't thinking about it. And I don't think anybody in our coaching staff was even thinking about that just yet. That wasn't one of the wins that we had put as a goal, you know, of winning a dual meet on our goal sheet. But it was pretty amazing.
That is amazing. You went through the entire meet and had no idea that you might be about to get the first win in a decade and a half.
Yeah. I mean, we weren't in that stage where we were counting points, right, and things like that. We were just looking for good swims. Are you taking care of the things that we had talked about in practice and we wanted to see in your race strategies and things like that? And we had a couple wins in some events, and we had a couple, you know, really close finishes. You know, we thought we did well. We thought we were competitive, but it just did not dawn on us to think, you know, hey, we got a chance to win this one. You know, we were just swimming and we were just diving, taking care of our business.
You're doing your job. I love that. That's amazing. At Howard, your team makes up a third of all Black swimmers in the college circuit. Mm-hmm. One team. And that's absolutely wild to me. What can we do? What can the swimming world do to help diversify this sport, to help make it more accessible to Black people, to people of color, whoever it is? Because this is, I mean, it's a predominantly white sport. And mm-hmm. the fact that your team has 33% of all Black swimmers in the collegiate circle, that's a problem to me. So yeah. I would love to hear what we can do better.
Yeah. You know, I really wish there was an OSFA, which one size fits all answer, you know, for that. I think it's a very dynamic approach to it. I know the USA Swimming, USA Foundation is doing a lot of little things. It's definitely proven to be beneficial. You know, there's the Swim United with Cullen Jones. There's Swim 1922 with Maritza, that are all have initiatives to provide more access, provide a better first time experience, more resources. There's diversity in aquatics with Dr. Lynch, who's partnering with USA Swimming. There's a USA Swimming Foundation's grant towards HBCUs that can be used towards facilities and can be used towards, you know, different resources. You know, some of the things that are my checklist for every coach that asks that question is, number one, thank you for asking, because now you're becoming a part of the solution. I've talked way too many times to swimmers, elite level and below, coaches, elite level and below, who don't recognize it as a problem. And they just see it as, this is the norm. And when you can come to the table and say, what can I do? That means that you're now becoming a part of the solution, which I have a great appreciation for. Some of the small level things is, a lot of the colleges and universities, they're not too far from under-resourced communities. So being able to host a clinic, and it doesn't have to be, it could be just the universities hosting the clinic. It could be an invitation to a swim meet, like going outside of the normal invitations or traditional people who come to see the swim meets, which are typically parents, siblings, you know, and some ex-swimmers or ex-athletes that come and swim. Being able to deliberately go into some of those schools, the community centers, or even the recreational swim programs that are in the area, and inviting them. How cool is it, every time we have a swim meet, we invite at least three swim programs to our swim meets, like actually go and invite. We have several that come, but we purposefully invite these other swim programs to come and be special guests. And then talking about the DJ gives them a big shout out at the meet. You know, we have a personalized section for them so they feel special. So it's not just like, oh, I'm here on a field trip and, you know, it's whatever. Like they feel like, hey, I'm a part of something in this environment that's actually really special. So those are little things that college programs can do is creating the invitation. The other things that you can do is looking at it as a dynamic. Not only do we have, you know, a problem with as USA Swimming and NCAA Swimming that the population of swimmers does not fit the demographic of the US or the NCAA, we have to make sure that we have more officials and we have more timers, more judges, more coaches from diverse backgrounds, especially those of color, especially women. Those areas, we have to do more of not just saying, hey, the door is open, which a lot of coaches and a lot of higher level administrators say, well, I don't see a problem. Everyone can come in. That's something I hear a lot. But there has to be more because we have so many years of systematic neglect that we have to do more than just say, okay, the doors are open. We have to have individuals who are stewards to say, hey, come on with me. I'm going to show you where to go. This is what you do to be able to hand it off. And I know a lot of the organizations like ASCA and CISCA are doing a really good job with the mentorship programs of being able to create those connections. I have gained so much value from mentorship programs like that, of learning from Randy Horner, who's over at Florida International University, you know, and that way it opens the door, but then you get someone who can actually talk you through all the different things because, you know, yeah, swimming is pretty uncomplicated, but the swimming world and how to navigate it is pretty complicated, especially learning where the different pathways can lead you to and even, how to navigate through them. So those are some of the things, you know, at the top of my head. And again, there's no one size fits all. But if everyone asks that question of themselves and then dedicate to trying something, you know, I think that we will get closer and closer to bridging that gap between, you know, the amount of minority swimmers that are in USA Swimming as well as in collegiate swimming.
You mentioned earlier pressuring your former AD to bring a program to another. Do you think expanding swimming programs back into the HBCUs, since you guys are now the only one, you think there's a role for that and kind of that trickle down?
Yeah, there's no question. I'm glad you asked that. I'm pretty passionate. As you can tell, I use my words. It's almost a disservice that HBCUs don't have swimming and diving, competitive swimming diving programs now. And don't get me wrong, there's a lot of factors and a lot of reasons that were outside of the current administration's control that caused them to end it. But when you have HBCUs that have a captured audience, you know, this is a great opportunity to have a competitive swim and dive program, especially because so many of the HBCUs do have fully functioning facilities. And some of the facilities are even in way better shape than we have even here at Bird Gymnasium. One of the things that tells me that there is a desire and there's enough of desire within the youth swimming program, so the 18 and unders, is we host a camp here, the Nick Askew Swim and Dive Camp. It's the only camp hosted at an HBCU and it's coached predominantly by HBCU coaches. And we have a wait list of over 75 people every single camp session, every single year. So there are so many swimmers of color who are looking for an HBCU education and an opportunity to swim or dive at that level because, you know, at our camps, you know, not trying to boast or anything, we sell out within 2 weeks and then we have a waiting list. So that tells you the numbers are there. And a lot of the places they're coming from, there are HBCUs, for instance, Maryland. There are a lot of HBCUs that are in Maryland and Maryland's a hotbed for swimming and diving. I mean, you've got the two greats, Katie Ledecky from Maryland, right? I remember going to our high school meet and I'm like, why is it so crowded here? Like, this is crazy. And then I saw her swim. I was like, oh my God, that's why. And then, you know, Michael Phelps is right here from the Baltimore area. So swimming and diving is a hotbed in Maryland. And as a state school, which a lot of the HBCUs are, like Coppin State University, Morgan State University, who both have facilities, they don't even have to offer athletic scholarships because their in-state tuition is so reasonable that they can attend that school and still compete. So I look forward to the opportunity of talking to, you know, more coaches, more swim enthusiasts, more athletic directors, more decision makers about really asking themselves, why don't we have a swimming and dive program? What are our biggest issues? What are our biggest problems? It could be facilities, or it could be, you know, they just don't know how that would look. I'm happy to talk about it and tell them, you know, what our solution strategy have been here, and to share the wealth, because I think far too many of our young swimmer divers of color don't have another option. Yeah, and they do desire an HBCU experience as, you know, their higher education experience. But Howard's the only choice.
When you talk about all of those minority swimmers and Black swimmers getting overlooked, can you kind of shine a light upon how incredible the opportunity is to swim at a collegiate level at an HBCU, and why that helps shaping a person into the person that they will become years later?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm a absolute product of an HBCU education and swam for Howard, you know, all 4 years. And I can specifically talk about the value that it had for me and how I feel like it molded me as a better person. You know, I grew up in North Carolina, swam club, swam high school. So I'm at a pretty high level. And as I continued to go up the levels, I saw less and less of people who looked at me and looked like me in every different level, whether it was as a swimmer, whether it was as an official or a timer or volunteer or anything. And it wasn't until I got to Howard that I really realized that that was a pretty big void. You know, it was kind of a loneliness that I had that at that age, I wasn't able to express because I didn't know why I was and how to articulate it. But when I got to Howard, I remember recognizing I was in the pool and we were swimming. It was first week of practice in the team. And I remember looking, I'm like, oh my gosh, there are so many other people of color here and they're amazing swimmers. And just feeling that overall, that just warm feeling of wow, this is an amazing space. I've never seen this before in my life. And then we talk about the pressure. It's like, dang, I really got to perform now. Like, this is a place where we get to excel. And all the while, you know, in age group, I had feelings of, oh, you know, I don't want to do this anymore. For what? What's the purpose? Now I was really, you know, inspired to swim, even train even harder to, you know, have a chance of swimming even faster for my team, you know, and for, because it's much bigger than the individual, you know, as we talk about team sports. And this gave me even more reason to try to be my absolute best. And I think for a young male or young female who are aspiring to be, you know, a competitive swimmer at the collegiate level, you know, this can definitely be that space where they get that same type of feeling. And it, you know, doesn't mean that a person of color can only get that feeling at an HBCU. You can get it anywhere. But it was the right thing for me and it was the right option for me. And I know that it could be from hearing from my teams of current and my teams of past, it's absolutely the right space for them. And I also hear from other swimmers who've, like I said, have been to our camp who, because our roster can only be, but so big. Again, we only have 6 lanes, 25 yards. They've gone to another school, but they stopped their swimming career because they did not want to swim at that institution, or may not have, the institution and their level may not have met, but they didn't have any other options. So I know it's very fulfilling. It's very warm. And it's special to be a part of such a unique group.
So it's one thing to take over a program that is been down for a long time. I think it's another thing when it's your program, when it's the program that you swam at. Did you feel an extra level of responsibility or an extra level of pressure taking over a program that had, like you said, helped mold you, helped shape you, gave you such an awesome experience? Did that add a layer to this challenge of taking over this program?
I think so. Matter of fact, I know so. My team knows I'm usually the first one here. And I'm usually the last one to leave. And every aspect of the program, I've got my fingers on. And it comes down to the temperature of the pool. It comes down to, you know, the chemical levels of the pool and all of that, because I'm so invested in this program and these young men and these women and these coaching staff. If you look at our coaching staff, five out of the six are HBCU graduates, and 4 of the 6 are Howard Swim and Dive graduates. So there's an amazing, I wanted to build our coaching staff very dynamically of people who were very similar to me, understood that, listen, we got an opportunity to do something really, really big in a special place. And I know you're going to take care of it because you're going to feel like it's yours. You're going to feel that deeper connection to it. And that was really important to me as well as we were building out the program and making sure that we found ways to get better and better. And everyone on our coaching staff, from Dr. Lentz to Jasmine Payne, Courtney Miller, Salim King, Tony Miller, all of them give all of themselves to this program just the same way that I do, because we know that that's the only way it's going to get done. At the collegiate level, there are so many things that are into play as we're continuing to develop a program. No one person can do it, and no one person is going to be able to do it well, especially in an under-resourced circumstances. And we were very under-resourced early on. And it was mainly because the coach just didn't have the time, effort, energy, or even willingness to do the extra things, you know, way more than the salary or the job description called for to help the team get better. So, you know, a lot of the coaches before me were kind of placeholders. They were excellent swim coaches, took an opportunity to coach at a D1 level, did some great things, but we're not able to put in all of the efforts and energies like we have to help the program get better. So, you know, I know we took it on as a responsibility. And because I had advocated so much for the program to get cut, I needed to make sure that we did an outstanding job, you know, because they'd be like, oh yeah, that dude, he was just talking smoke. He's big mouth. He couldn't fix it, you know? So I'm glad that, you know, we all really dug in and rolled up our sleeves and got to work.
Your passion can be felt through this screen. And it's so beautiful. Like it's getting me like, I don't even want to be a coach, but after listening to you talk, I'm like, do I want to be a coach?
Like, come on.
Is this something I want to do? But in all seriousness, like I just talking to you, I can tell how much of your heart and your soul you pour into this program. What has been your proudest moment as a coach of this program, one of the most rewarding moments that you've experienced since you've taken it over?
Yeah, that's not fair.
I'm so sorry.
That is a brutal question.
I mean, you can give me like top three if I'm assuming there's like a million. Yeah. But.
Oh man, I might have to go more political on that. I just give you a nice general brush.
Yeah, it's great. Everything.
Yeah, honestly, I just love this team and how they've evolved so much. You know, we've got a really, really special situation, special group. I love how the team embraces not just the racing or the competition component, but the bigger picture. You know, we're very adamant about making sure that we are a positive influence for everyone, you know, and especially for those who may not even consider swimming as, you know, a life skill or even a competitive sport. The most important or the most prideful moments are always graduation. You know, seeing them in their tassel and their gown, that's so awesome to me. Seeing our team achieve, and that achievement for me is not just an NC2A qualification or a record breaking or winning conference championships. Those are all amazing. Don't get me wrong, but I'm the type of coach, and our coaching staff really dials into every single person and what those personal achievements are. Cause not everybody's going to break a record. Not every team is going to win conference championships every year or things like that. But there are little instances where we see someone work so hard to achieve something that's meaningful to them. And then seeing that glow right on their face when they hit it, you know, I'll tell you quickly, like, one of our young ladies, she's been struggling, you know, with dropping time and really frustrated because she felt like she was doing the work, but there was a block and not seeing the results in times. And then, you know, we were at conference championships and she touched the wall. She looked at the time and then she immediately looked at us and we were all going crazy. She just started boohoo crying, like ugly cry. And it touched our heart so much. And it turned out she actually broke the mile record and we didn't even know it. We just knew that she had swam faster than she had been swimming. And that's all we ever wanted. We knew she wanted it so bad. And we knew that she had, you know, had roadblock after roadblock, challenge after challenge, and she hit it. And it was just amazing. So those little things are those prideful moments. Those are those little love notes from God that show us that, hey, it's worth it. You know, all the tough things that we go through across the board, and to seeing that glow in that person's face is really amazing. So I don't necessarily have, I definitely don't have one. But you know, those are the things that I hold on to.
I feel like it's always about the little things in life.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I feel like the only way I could set you up with a question harder than that would be like, which team do you like better, tennis or swimming?
Tell us right now, on the record.
On the record. Everybody listening?
On the record.
Yeah.
You know, it always depends on the day. Depends on the day. Sometimes.
Good answer, Nick.
When it's giving me all the good vibes and tennis is giving me a headache, and some days tennis is giving me a headache and swim is giving me all the good vibes. And that's actually the way my life has really been. Swimming saved my tennis and tennis saved my swimming, because there were days, and we all know in sport, you know, it's really difficult, you know, to stay on track and to stay disciplined and keep things going. And having another activity or something that I did that I could lean on that gave me, you know, some boost was really, really helpful. And the same thing, you know, as in now, I love all four teams equally.
of course.
But, you know, they definitely give me different things from each one of them that helped me, you know, to stay a happy person.
Like Basil said at the beginning, I feel like with so many of our listeners being coaches, we can't let you go until we ask, like, how in the world do you manage balancing two programs? Like, it's just
two D1 programs.
Yeah. I think that there's probably like a segment of our listeners that are like, that's nonsense. There's no way nobody does it. So how do you actually do that?
It is not easy. And I do not recommend it for pretty much anyone, to be honest with you. I'm able to do it because I know the landscape so well, because I competed in D1 all, you know, for both programs, both sports, you know, all four of my years. And even when I graduated and moved on, I was still coaching both sports. So I know both sports in and out. I know the schedules in and out. The difference really just kind of comes down to building your group around you, being conscious of your environment. Number one, the things that you can control in your environment, like I talked about, you know, the aesthetics of our natatorium make a difference. You know, how things are organized within that natatorium do make a difference. And then your coaching staff, the people that you bring around you that have the same vision, the same passion, who are going to put forth the same amount of energies in, you know, into that common goal, that common vision, you know, are super important. And I've been very fortunate that administration, as we've continued to go, has given me more support staff. So we have a really amazing staff for our tennis group, and we have amazing staff for our swim group, where I get to, depending on the time of the season, move back and forth, depending on what we have, whether it's a practice versus a meet, or a conference meet versus a, you know, non-conference tennis match. So I get to pick and choose where I'm there. And if I'm not there, because I have such a great staff, I know that things are going to go smooth. I know that things are going to fall into place. And I know that when I do get an opportunity to step on deck or step onto court, you know, things are just going to, I get to become a complimentary piece versus, you know, the only person to say all be all, has to be in all places at all time type of person. So really, really fortunate that I do have such a great staff to be able to pull it off.
Should we do a little social kick, Matt?
Let's do it. All right. So these are social kick, our listener submitted questions. So we have three. These are sort of just free flowing. So whatever type of answer you want to give, go for it. The first one is Adriana H asks, what is the most important thing you look for during the recruiting process?
Oh, that's a great question. Recruiting is one of the things that we enjoy a lot, that entire process. And it's mainly because we get to talk to the swimmer or the diver about their character. We get to get glimpses of who they are as a person, what they want, and how much they're willing to work towards getting there. Because we can all say, and this is something we try to uncover in the recruiting process, we can all say, yeah, I want to be faster, I want to dive better. But if we're not talking about what are the things in your plan that are going to help you get there, then, you know, then it's going to show when you get to the collegiate level, because everybody wants to, you know, win a race or break a record or win conference or go to NCAAs, win NCAAs, those types of things. But not everybody, only a fraction, are really willing to do what it takes. So we try to really dig into what that character looks like in everyone in the recruiting process. And it's fun, you know. Now, one of the great things that have come up in the last 3 or 4 years is we do so many of the recruit conversations via video. So we're able to read the body language, and we're able to really, you know, get a little bit more personal in terms of seeing how the person reacts to certain questions and our responses and to their questions and things like that, to find out how they're ticking. And, you know, I think, you know, outside of academics and swimming ability, those are, you know, obviously those are the first two things that you need to have, but that character and showing that you are a dynamic person, that you can be an asset to the team, not just as a value in the pool and in how fast you are, but as a person. You know, I was just commenting the other day, we're at a tennis event, and one of the individuals that wasn't even the lineup, they were leading the group in the conditioning run, and everybody was feeding around that person. So that person wasn't good enough to compete, but that person was adding value to off the court or outside of the pool. And we love seeing things like that, because then dynamically as a group, you know, so those are really key, especially if you don't have the times or you're right on the cusp of other people that program is recruiting. Being able to show the type of person you are and the type of value you can bring through your character are going to be really key indicators that might give you, you know, that roster spot, that might earn you that roster spot.
Right. That's great advice. Good teammates are never go out of style. That's never a, All right. This is going to be another one where you're going to be asked your favorite of something, and probably not going to answer it, but this is Lily S. What is your favorite event to watch? I guess that could apply to either swimming or tennis. Let's keep it with swimming, since
let's keep it with swimming.
This is a swimming podcast.
My favorite event to watch. I have to say I'm a big fan of relays, and I'm a big fan of individual medley. You know, we were at CISCA, the National Invitational held in Ocala, Florida. And I just remember how much fun it was to watch the 1IM. And I know we don't compete that in Olympic. I know we don't compete that at NCAAs. But, man, that was so fun to watch. And then the 200IM and the 400IM as well, because you get to see, you know, those strengths and those weaknesses and how people try to, you know, hang on when it's not their best stroke. And then we get to see people who really try to push for it. So I love watching the individual medleys and relays, man. You know, who does not get turned on, you know, really, really excited, right? From watching the relays and those exchanges, those, you know, knowing who's anchoring versus who's leading off versus, you know, the other teams and how it could change. Those are super fun. Those are my favorites.
Good answer. I feel like the 100IM has a super high approval rating, but it might be in part because nobody ever actually gets to do it for real. Yeah. Like it doesn't actually do it. All right, last one. This is from John D. What do younger kids need to do, or what advice would you have for kids early on if their eventual goal is to swim in college?
Foundation is super important. So being a part of a program that can help you with your foundation, your fundamental skills, are going to be, you know, huge. A lot of times, one of the things I hear from parents are in the club environment, you know, because it's so many kids, their kids aren't getting enough of technique or enough of attention. You know, as coaches, we typically will tell them what they want to do or should be doing. We'll even spend some time explaining it, and then we send them off. And not enough times are we really get an opportunity, because again, we're looking at pool space. We only have 90 minutes or 2 hours. We're trying to get that set in. So we send them off. We're not getting enough opportunity to stop them and say, hey, that looks really good. I'd love it if you did this a little bit better, or while you're doing that, really focus here. So programs that are really doing that, well, I think are some of the best programs. And I think those are going to lead to a young swimmer having a better chance at competing at the collegiate level. Because once you get to the collegiate level, you know, it's really about the intensity of the practices and getting those, you know, running those intervals. You don't have a lot of time to teach new skills. As a matter of fact, it's very few times are you even going to have an opportunity to introduce a new skill, because when practice starts by the NCAA season, you're in season. You start, you train for 3 weeks. The first meet or first competition is within that. And then it's literally competition every week or every 2 weeks right after that. And we all know you shouldn't be trying to necessarily impart new skills, you know, during competitive phases. So being able to have that really strong base of foundation, that strong foundation, those fundamental skills early on are going to be super important. You know, being able to use the drills to teach the skill are going to be key. And then looking at, you know, diversifying the portfolio is what I call in the business world, right? Making sure that they can swim multiple events, especially as a collegiate swimmer, because very few programs, I can tell you probably zero mid-majors, are you going to be able to just specialize in the 50 or 100 back. Usually if you're recruited as a backstroker, you're going to swim the 50, the 100, and the 200, the 50 in the relay, 100 in the individual in relay, and then the 200 backstroke for the most part. So making sure that our young swimmers are looking at opportunities to continue to swim all of those links in those stroke events, and as well as, you know, finding where their sweet spot may be, you know, in the freestyle side of things. I'm a big proponent of, you know, you find your middies, and then your middies can either go down or go up, you know, but if you're only focused on sprint, then that's the only thing you're going to get better at. And sprint is the most competitive field, right? You look at how many heats of the 50 free are usually at, you know, summer league or high school or age group versus the 500 free or the 1,000. Sometimes they won't even swim it because they don't have enough people. They did this deep hold in the race from the race program. But at the collegiate level, we have to have it in our formats. So we want to make sure that we have people who can swim it and swim it competitively and not be like, oh my God, I don't want to swim the 500. I'm not a 500 swimmer, but who embrace it as a part of, you know, this is an opportunity to score points for my team. So those are the things that I would highly recommend, you know, as a young swimmer, parents, you know, to be thinking about, as well as coaches as they're coaching these youth in those programs.
Nick, we really appreciate the time, man. Thank you very much. It's great to talk to you and wish you the best of luck in all the seasons you have ahead of you, both tennis and swimming.
I appreciate it. Listen, I want to personally invite both of you for Battle at the Burr 3 coming up next year. It's one thing to see it on you know, the social media and videos and things like that. It's a whole nother thing to experience it firsthand. So first or second weekend of October, go ahead and put a little, you know, a box around those dates. Love to have you guys in the Burr.
Make it happen, Basil. Let's go.
Let's take it. Nick, thank you so much.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Of course.
All right. Thanks again to Nick for his time. That is an inspirational guy, Basil.
Yeah, that was so much fun. Like I said in the interview, his passion just oozes out of the screen, and hopefully everybody listening felt it, because the swimming world needs more people like him. Like, if we could clone him a million times and have him lead all the programs and be that invested in every program, the swimming world would be a better place. So it's like so special that we were able to take an hour out of his day while he's coaching 2 Division I programs, is a husband, has 3 kids, like has enough on his plate. So I feel very fortunate that we got to speak with him.
Yeah. Yeah. I the thing, there's so much there but there is like the creativity around events sides too. Like, it kind of transcends some of the other aspects of what he talked about. Is like, you could apply that regardless of your circumstances. Like, what can you do to make your swim meets more fun? And like, you're seeing a measurable impact for it there with them, even though he's doing all that while coaching. I mean, really it's 4 teams, because it's men's and women's, right. And like, able to balance all of that. It's just wild.
It's unreal. And we have some fun stuff coming up, Barbini. Where are we going?
We do. Yeah. So our final stop of the Tier Pro Series is in San Antonio from April 10 to 13. That is, that should be a good one. It's a awesome outdoor pool. Have you been at that pool, Basil? Yeah, you were there.
Actually, no, for our training trip.
Yeah, in 16. Yeah, it's a phenomenal facility. Mm-hmm. Great, great spectator setup. We had our training camp there prior to Rio, and it's really, really cool. It'd be great. We're going to have kind of the most of, at least the East Coast-based folks, I think, will make the trip down there. The center of the country will make the trip. So it should be the most competitive meet we've had to this point. And then we're just a few weeks away from Olympic trials. And of course, there are still tickets for sale. Please jump on that, usaswimming.org/trials tickets. And we really, really are getting more excited as the closer we get, and the more the kind of all the details start to fill in, and we see some swimming and you start to try to like correlate. It's like, oh, what's happening in NCAAs and how's that's going to play out? Like, we're into the fun part of the story now, Basil.
Oh, 100%. And I think at Swim Trials, we kind of take a page out of Howard's book in terms of,
right,
the amount of excitement around Olympic trials. Like, we're swimming in an NFL stadium. Like, I don't know if we have a DJ, but there's definitely incredible sound and fire and aqua zone and all the things that you could ever imagine a swim meet. It's going to be there. And then again, in an NFL stadium. So, I mean, Barbie, you and I are going to be there the whole time. I'll be there with NBC. You'll be there with USA Swimming. So it's definitely, I'm just like, kind of sad that I'm not swimming anymore. I was like, man, I really want to race in an NFL stadium. So if I can't race, I'm at least going to spectate and work a little. So I'm really excited. And yeah, the fact that it's NCAA season, like, we're in the final hour, less than 100 mm-hmm. days out, like, I'm ready. Let's go.
Yeah, let's go. We can sign you up for a time trial or something, Bob. Well, if you want to get a little 4 a.m.
No. It doesn't need to be official. Like,
oh, okay.
It'll just be with you and me, Barbie.
On time. Yeah. Float around for.
No time on that.
I swam in a trials in a football
right,
stadium.
Right. I made my cut.
Yeah, that's basically my level of participation these days. It's like, I was in.
I got in the water, so right. That counts.
Yeah, it's the same water. I dove off the block. And my goggles probably filled up.
Always.
All right, well, everybody, thank you for listening. Please rate us, review us, and we will see you next month. We're for a couple more before we get to Indy. So thanks, everybody. Basil, we'll see you soon.
See you soon, Barbini. Thank you, guys.
Thank you for listening to Kick Set with USA Swimming. Head to usaswimming.org for more episodes and make sure you subscribe to Kick Set wherever you get your podcasts.